obviously frustrating for citizens to feel that the majority has chosen one candidate only to see the other one wins the Electoral College and becomes president. It's very disenfranchising. Hi, and welcome to the Shrink Zone Third Psychology and Social Justice Podcast. I'm psychologist Cindy Ariel.
And I'm psychologist Julie Mayer. Welcome in.
Today we're going to talk about what we've been learning about the Electoral College and the racism inherent in that, just as we've been learning about the racism inherent in so many of the institutions that we have and hold.
Yeah, that we've never realized are so racist. It's pretty shocking. There has been a lot of talk in the past couple of decades about the Electoral College. I'm sure you've heard some of it. Should we keep it? Should we get rid of it? Why do we even have it? Today, we're going to talk about what it is, why it should be abolished, and how it is actually a racist policy. The original idea was to make voting more fair for different sized states. So it was based both on the numbers of senators and House of Representative members in each state. All the states have two senators, no matter how large or small they are. That's why there's 100. And they have House members in proportion to their populations. So some states have more House of Representative members because they have way bigger populations, like California. So the Electoral College was a kind of compromise to make all the states feel sort of equally represented. Each state gets a number of electors from the size of its population, basically as many lawmakers as it has in Congress and the Senate. California has the most, because it's so big, at 55, while states with smaller populations like Alaska or North Dakota, I guess, they get the minimum, which is always 3. And there are a total of 538 electors, and candidates have to win the majority of electoral votes in order to win the presidency. Usually, states award their electoral votes to whoever won the majority of the votes in that state.
But the Electoral College was also an anti-majority plan. When we go to the polls to vote for the next president, we're actually casting votes that go to a group of officials that make up the Electoral College, the group of people called electors, whose job it is to choose the president and vice president. And I know this all sounds simple, but sometimes I need things broken down like that.
I didn't know all this. It's really complicated.
So because of the way it's set up, a candidate can become president by winning a number of tight races in certain states where they get a large number of the electoral votes, even though they didn't win the popular vote. So the Electoral College was actually set up to reject the popular vote for the president because the framers of our Constitution didn't trust the population to make the wisest choice for ourselves. So they found this way to make it possible for the president to win without a majority of the popular vote. Arrogant much?
Yeah. they didn't really trust that people would make the right decision, which is, I guess, the one that the people in power wanted to make.
No, we're not smart enough.
No, we're just people. Not only that, there are a lot of problems with the Electoral College, aside from the fact that it's obnoxious. aside from setting up minority rule, it contributes to really, really unequal distribution of campaign resources, unequal voting power dependent on where you live. It enforces the two-party system and the winner-take-all for states in terms of distributing the Electoral College votes.
There were 5 presidential elections in which the person who won the most popular vote did not win the election.
That's 5. That's a lot.
Even if we just look at the most recent ones, we have Bush versus Gore in 2000, where it all came down to Florida's 25 Electoral College votes. That time, the Supreme Court stepped in and the presidency went to Bush, even though Gore had won the popular vote by about 500,000 votes.
All I can think of is the Hanging Chads controversy.
Yes. If you don't know about the Hanging Chads, look up Hanging Chads. That was a big deal at the time. Mm. The latest issue with the Electoral College happened in 2016 when Trump lost the popular vote by almost 3 million ballots, but won the Electoral College by 74 votes. He became the fifth man to become president without winning the popular vote.
Yeah, that was a terrible day. I remember that. I would like to think that having a president who lost the popular vote is not a great way to start off a new term. Especially like with Trump, where he doesn't take into account that more people voted against him than for him, and he should perhaps be focusing on some of their desires for what a president should be and do. Take those things into account when governing.
Yeah.
So that's why we decided to look into what this weird Electoral College system is all about. According to an article from The Atlantic, of the factors that determined the framers' creation of the Electoral College, race and slavery were probably at the forefront. And originally, the populations in the North and the South were about equal. About a third of the people in the South, though, were slaves. So since they couldn't vote, they weren't allowed to vote, the South would have had less clout. It wasn't equal because a third of their population wasn't voting. So they had fewer votes. So if not for the Electoral College, they would have had less power than the North. So you could say, in part, the Electoral College was designed to empower Southern white people.
Probably in large part. So much of the creation of our nation was founded with slavery and race at the forefront and trying to empower and hold on to any power for whites. To this day, the Electoral College continues to do just that. Georgia turned blue this year.
Yay!
Yeah, but even in those southern states where the population of African Americans is 25% or more, those states tend to stay red. The black vote is hidden. As Stacey Abrams demonstrated in Georgia, those states aren't necessarily red states. They're voter-suppressed states. Imagine the opposite, a country in which the black vote were weighed extra so that they couldn't be ignored. Disempowerment of people of color is at the center of the Electoral College.
Yeah, it's so depressing. There's a long history of the Electoral College not quite working right, as we've been describing. There was the tie in 1800s between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, though Aaron Burr was running as Jefferson's vice president. So the Constitution was amended at the time to prevent further ballot confusion.
Well, I'm not sure, but I feel like if it were possible, that might have happened this year with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden.
Yeah. Well, they put that amendment in a very long time ago. So. And for that reason. And there were other issues too. In 1824, even though Jackson won the popular vote, he lost the Electoral College because there were three candidates. And Clay gave his votes to Adams in exchange for the job of Secretary of State. I mean, what kind of backroom deal is that? Jackson called that a corrupt bargain. And we may not even know how often that happens or for what bargain. And certainly lately, I have to guess there's been a whole lot of backroom bargains with Trump.
Indeed. Actually, I think that's one of those corrupt bargains or backroom bargains that happens so much. I'm not sure politicians even consider it corrupt in that way, but that's a conversation we can have another day.
There's so many conversations to have. And just to keep going, in 1876, Rutherford B. Hayes ran against Samuel Tilden in such a close race that the electoral votes of just four states decided the presidency. Tilden won the popular vote but lost the Electoral College and therefore lost the presidency.
That just seems so ridiculous. And it's so frustrating how many times we've seen that happen. Yep. And Hayes also complained at the time that there was voter intimidation against African-American voters in Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. Doesn't that sound familiar?
The whole thing seems really familiar. And also just the fact that the Electoral College, even in this recent election between Trump and Biden, really rested on a handful of states. We kept watching Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, it was, and Michigan. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
The way that the Electoral College is structured makes it likely to overrepresent the views of a comparatively small number of people. Basically, the Electoral College gives disproportionate power to smaller states because of statewide winner-take-all laws. States award all the electors, the people who vote for the Electoral College, to the candidate with the most popular votes in the state. The effect is that it erases the votes in the state that are from people who didn't vote for the top candidate. Winner-take-all makes states safe, very likely to go to one party or the other, very predictable. The ones that aren't predictable become swing states where a few thousand votes can shift all the electors to the other candidate. The winner-take-all doesn't reflect the actual diversity of the state. And as a result, it divides all of us artificially. Blue states give all their electors to the Democratic candidate, and the red states give all their electors to the Republican candidate, regardless of how many in those states vote for the opponent. Each state has two Electoral College votes, regardless of its size, and additional Electoral College votes to match its number of House of Representative members. The format overrepresents small and medium states at the expense of larger, more populated, and usually more diverse states. And given the inequality and the geographical differences across states, you know, it's going to overrepresent small and medium-sized states and underrepresent large states.
It's really hard to understand.
I think it means that the smaller states who should have less economic power have more than they should because of the Electoral College. That's how the South kept its power, remember?
Oh, yeah. Another interesting detail that fits into this whole picture is that the Electoral College isn't even especially popular among the people of this country. In 1967, 58% favored its abolition. In 1981, it went up to 75%. And at this point, it's pretty much divided among party lines, where Republicans favor the Electoral College and Democrats oppose it.
I can see why, because in recent elections where the popular vote did not win the election, but the Electoral College did, it's been Republicans who have won.
Yeah, and it's obviously frustrating for citizens to feel that the majority has chosen one candidate only to see the other one wins the Electoral College and becomes president. It's very disenfranchising.
Yes, it is. Personally, I find it extremely frustrating, and it's a big part of our system and a major reason why people think their votes don't count. Even the current lame duck in the White House, and that's a compliment, tweeted in 2012 that the Electoral College is a disaster for our democracy. And then that's exactly how he won the nomination in 2016, through the Electoral College, not the popular vote.
I totally agree we'd be better off without the Electoral College. But the Electoral College is mandated by our Constitution, and abolishing it would take a constitutional amendment. 2/3 of both the House and the Senate would have to agree, as well as 38 out of 50 states. Over the past 200 years, there have been over 700 proposals to modify or get rid of the Electoral College, and so far, all unsuccessful. There is a workaround that we may have to give serious attention to. States can change the way they count votes. Individual states can pass bills to guarantee that the candidate with the most votes becomes president. And this can effectively change the impact of the Electoral College without changing the Constitution. Enough states committing to this could also make a nationwide change in the way our next administration gets elected and bring it to the majority or the popular vote.
That sounds very interesting. Mm-hmm. According to the organization National Popular Votes website, this commitment has been enacted to law already by 15 states plus Washington, D.C., with a total of 196 electoral votes. It could actually go into effect with an additional 74 electoral votes. How about that? The National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, NPVIC, is a multi-state agreement to commit electors to vote for the candidate who wins the nationwide popular vote, even if they lose the popular vote in their state. This will only work to sidestep the way the Electoral College traditionally works if there are 270 of those votes from states that agree to handle it that way. If you're interested in it and learning more about it, go to nationalpopularvote.com.
So we hope you learned something today. We sure did.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening today. You can find us at shrinksonthird.com and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Shrinks on Third. Until next time,
take care.